Brittany Goyen is the broker owner of BB Realty CT, offices in Middletown and Glastonbury. Brittany is also a good friend of mine. Full disclosure, she is also my broker. I've mentioned the fact I'm a realtor on here a couple of times. This is the woman I go to with all of my questions. Figured have you on today. Let's talk about the housing market. Brittany, thanks so much for joining us on ICC today.
Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for the invite. I appreciate it.
Well, like I said, you're my guru, and you know, there's a lot of misinformation, I feel like, and I see a lot of reports on the news and in newspapers, and they don't really talk to realtors about it, and so I just kind of wanted to talk about the market. We still have low inventory. Interest rates are on the rise, so I also want to jump into some myths. You know, we talk about these a lot, and it's, I think, things that I'd like you to address, so people really have a better understanding of the real estate market. Now, just so everybody knows, Brittany, right now we do have a serious inventory problem. What does that mean for buyers and sellers?
Yeah, so, you know, I've looked at the numbers, especially knowing that I was going to get on the radio and talk to such a top-notch professional like yourself, Joe.
Thank you.
February of 2022 was an all-time low for the Connecticut real estate market as far as houses on the market. We only have, in the entire state of Connecticut as of February, 8,500 listings. Just to kind of give everybody an idea of how much of a lack that is, in March of 2021, we had 13,000 listings, and in March of 2022, we had 11,000. And as everybody knows, through COVID, we've continued to have a real lack of inventory. So, you know, to say from March 21 to March 22 that we're down another 2,000 listings, we definitely are still in our inventory hole, that's for sure.
Now, for most of this, for most of the pandemic, the interest rates have been incredibly low. They were between 2.74 and 3.08 all of last year. So while it was a seller's market, it was such a great deal for buyers. The interest rate now up to about 4.85. That's going to affect people's overall buying power.
Yeah, and actually even more bad news regarding interest rates. Today they're at 5.25. So definitely on the rise there, and there's not really a way to forecast if that's going to start to come back down for us. It looks like it's going to continue to rise a little bit there. So,
all right, so here's the thing, right? If you're looking for a house right now, and with this limited inventory, and obviously as realtors we're going to say, you want to make your best offer right off the jump. And normally you wouldn't do that. You'd come in a little lower. You'd negotiate. But in a market where you have limited inventory, right, you really just have to come guns blazing if you want the house that you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing people, I've had people as much as $75,000 over asking not get the house, waiving inspections, fast closes, cash out of pocket over appraisal. Like, people are pulling out all the stops and still not getting homes. So it's challenging.
There was a point, I think it was last March, if I'm not mistaken, 58% of all sales in Connecticut went for over asking.
Yeah. And that's not just Connecticut. It's everywhere.
Right. Again, limited inventory. I think people are less inclined to move. I think a lot of people's situations have changed, whether it be now they're working from home. So maybe now a commute wouldn't be a factor. But again, this is one of those markets where if you find the home you want, and I would also say you probably want to have a real estate agent helping you with this. You're going to run into situations where, and this is a thing, I wanted to talk about this in the second half of our conversation, but people are foregoing home inspections to get away get rid of some of those contingencies in order to make their deal seem even better. There's obviously some drawback to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything in real estate is very circumstantial, but before COVID, I would tell my buyers, I don't care if it's new construction, I still recommend doing a home inspection, and I still stick to that. I still think a home inspection is very important because you can go into your new home with your eyes wide open, whether it be that you're going to ask the seller for repairs or that you're not, you'll know, okay, you know what, that water spigot needs to be replaced and that toilet is a little loose or whatever the situation may be. But, you know, the cold reality of the market right now is that there are other buyers out there that are just completely waiving the home inspection altogether and assuming that risk. So I always tell our clients, you have to do what works for you. And when the house is right and the time is right, it's going to come together. You just have to have that faith right now in the market.
So we're going to talk about some myths in a moment. But before we even get into that, one of the things I hear from people all the time, and I hear realtors complain about this in the real estate chat groups on Facebook, is, and I'm sure you've heard this, Brittany, where someone will be like, well, 8 years ago, they only spent $175. Why is that completely useless for today?
I mean, it doesn't matter what the house sold for when somebody bought it. People have put money into maintaining the home for however many years. But on top of that, we're in a completely different economy now than we were 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And everything continues to climb. I know a sticking point for a lot of people is like, oh, well, in 2008, when the market crashed, and it's like, well, 2008 was a different market. You know, we're not in that market now. So it really doesn't matter what somebody purchased a home for. What matters is what other people in the market right now are willing to pay for it. And that's kind of what sets the price.
So here's another one I hear a lot. I know you do as well. I think we've talked about this before. But somebody will go in and they'll put in a new bathroom or they'll upgrade their kitchen. They put $40,000-$50,000 into a kitchen or whatever, and they expect the value of their homes just jumped about $40,000. That's not accurate at all.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the area. There's a lot of factors that go into determining the price of a home besides just cosmetic upgrades. What I've always kind of told people is things like replacing a furnace or replacing a water heater, it's going to increase your sale value in the sense of it's going to create a faster sale. People are going to be more attracted to your property over maybe the next door neighbor's property that doesn't have those things. But those things are really maintenance things that you have to do in order to continue to maintain a level of enjoyment of your property. And then when you upgrade, you have to be really careful with updating kitchens and bathrooms and whatnot, because for one, you can't fall subject to the trends. Sometimes people will get a little too trendy, and in a couple of years, that trend is gone. So you need to update it again. And you have to be careful with personal taste, because your taste, unfortunately, is not the taste of every other buyer out there. So,
Brittany Goyen is the broker and owner of BB Realty CT. There's offices in Middletown and in Glastonbury, along with your partner Brittany McCann. We're going to take a quick break. We'll do some quick traffic and weather. We'll have more with Brittany. We're going to get into some of the myths that people tend to believe. We're going to clear this up. I'm going to tell Brittany the myth, and she's going to tell you what the actual reality of that is. And we'll do that coming up right after traffic and weather on Connecticut Today on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM. I'm Joe Aguirre in for Paul Pacelli. Order will be restored. Paul will be back tomorrow. I'm on the phone line here with Brittany Goyen, the broker owner of BB Realty CT. We just talked a little bit about the market, Brittany. Now, I want to get into some of these myths. These are things that maybe have come from the past, markets that were different than today's. For instance, myth number one, looking at homes is the best first step to home buying.
Yeah, I mean, in a market like we're in now, not just always, but especially the market we're in now, we definitely need you to talk to a lender and get your finances figured out before ever walking into a property. And actually, I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but in Connecticut, it is the law that we have our buyers do their due diligence before ever entering a home.
Okay, how about this? You need 20% down payment and closing costs.
Nope, not true. It totally depends on you and your credit and your qualification, but you can do a 3%, 3.5% down payment. Some programs actually offer no down payment depending on your qualification. So there are plenty of options out there.
Especially if you're a veteran, great VA loans you could take advantage of as well.
Absolutely.
Buying a home means few repairs in the short-term future.
Yeah, I think you had initially talked to me about buying a new home, and I have to say that I've actually seen some new homes have more repair needs in the very beginning of homeownership than existing homes. It seems like you kind of have to work out some of the kinks after you purchase a new home, but any home is going to need a little bit of something.
Here's another good myth, Brittany. A down payment is the only upfront cost.
No. Yeah, that's another myth, Joe. So as a buyer, you're going to have a couple of costs associated with home buying, obviously. The obvious is your first initial down payment deposit to hold the property, but then you also have cost to inspect the property, cost to appraise the property, and in a competitive market like this, sometimes you're going to be performing repairs on homes that you don't own. So there are a few costs to get through before you can actually close on the home and call it yours.
And that's pretty special to this market, doing repairs on a home you don't own yet. Again, typically something your closing attorney would be like, don't do that. But in this market,
yeah.
Again, you know, we have to do things if you really want to get the house. Here's another myth. We talked about getting pre-approved. Does getting pre-approved hurt your credit score?
So obviously it's going to show up as an inquiry on your credit score, but you do have some time to shop around. That's one thing I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, I got pre-approved with Rocket Mortgage and I just want to use them. But, you know, it does behoove you as a buyer to do your due diligence and to shop those rates and also find somebody that you like and can relate to a little bit. You're going to be working with this person. They're going to be in your personal finances for at least a few months. So you want somebody you like.
Yeah. Somebody you know and trust and isn't from a website. I've never been a big fan of that sort of stuff. Here's another good myth, and I think this could apply to younger people and also to older people. Schools don't matter if you don't have kids.
I mean, if you're going to live in the home for the rest of your life, then sure, maybe it's not a concern for you. But people buying your home, you do want to attract anyone and everyone as a buyer. So I know right now in the current market, that's not necessarily something people are worried about, but it is something that you should think about as a home buyer, because you are, at the end of the day, this is your biggest investment.
Here's another good myth. You must sell your current home before you buy a new one.
Yeah. I mean, again, no, it all depends on your specific financial situation. If that's what works for you, then we have ways, even in the current market, to do that. It looks a little bit different right now because the market is so challenging for buyers, but you do not have to sell your home to buy.
All right, here's the last myth, and this one almost could be up for interpretation even, but you hear it all the time from listing agents, and you see it in a lot of these articles where they tell you how to get yourself set up. Remove all your family photos from the wall before you list your house for sale.
Yeah. I mean, there are kind of two sides to this, Joe. So on one hand, you don't know exactly who's walking through your property. Do you want them seeing your close family pictures? Definitely. I have had some very explicit pictures on the wall and some showings that I've done, so take those down. But buyers do like to see photos of the current owners of the property. So it's totally up to you and your preference. Depersonalize as much as you can without making it feel like an empty shell.
Brittany Goyne is the broker owner of BB Realty CT. As I said, she's also my real estate broker and a very good friend. And Brittany, I really appreciate you coming on, talking about the Connecticut real estate market. I couldn't think of a better person to come on here and talk to about it with today. So thank you very much.
Aww,
I'm sure
you.
You've got a lot of work to do the rest of the day. So have at it. And thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Joe. Bye-bye.
According to research by Cybercrime Magazine, the cost of cybercrime will reach $6 trillion worldwide by 2021. The cost of ransomware damages will rise to $20 billion. 98% of cyber attacks rely on social engineering. 43% of recent attacks on small businesses were executed using phishing or other social engineering attacks. Jason Garapi, the Business Development Operations Manager for Endicom Business IT Solutions in Rocky Hill, is here to join us. Jason, thanks so much for being here. Sounds like people are still clicking on those email links.
Hey, Joe. Hi. Thanks for having me. Yes, it's still a pretty common occurrence, especially in today's world.
If you get an email from somebody, is there something I can look for that will tell me if this thing might be malicious or not? And you and I just talked about this the other day. Sometimes it might be a good idea, if you get a weird-looking email, just shoot somebody a text before you click on it.
It's definitely a great idea to do that. You know, Joe, there are definitely signs to look for. You know, questions to ask yourself when you get an email, you know, that and you're suspicious, you know, like, are there a lot of language, spelling, or grammar errors in the email? Is the contact name of the email, you know, the sender that you're getting it from, is the email bizarre or unusual? Did the email come from an unknown source or an unknown email address? Things like that. Are there embedded links in the email that have weird URLs or what you might call web addresses? Usually there's a reason that an email, you get a strange feeling about it after looking it over, or you're suspicious. So definitely ask yourself those questions. You know, thankfully in the last 5 years, email software has gotten better at filtering out a lot of spam and malicious emails that are sent out every day, but they're by no means perfect. Malicious emails are a big deal that can cause a lot of havoc. And so we like to use software with our clients that can train their employees to spot potentially dangerous emails and learn what to look out for. And it's always a good idea to have a nose for that.
Yeah, now, Jason, you told me something last time we talked, and I was shocked by this. I asked you the question, how often should people be changing their passwords? I know I don't do it often enough. I was thinking like 6 months to a year. That's not even close to right.
Yeah, definitely. It's got to be a lot quicker. It's got to be every 3 months. Nowadays, with the frequency and level of threats out there, you would definitely ideally change your password every 3 months.
Now, according to Accenture's cost of cybercrime study, 43% of these cyber attacks are aimed at small businesses. Only 14% are actually prepared to defend themselves. What sort of steps should individuals and small businesses in particular do to protect themselves, as they're clearly the targets now?
Well, one of the ways is what we just talked about, email. Let's go back to email. Passwords. Let's go back to passwords for a second, because it's not just changing the password every 3 months. Another way you can protect yourself is you should be creating passwords that are complex, have at least 8 characters, and contain a mixture of upper and lowercase letters that contain numbers and symbols. You know, never use passwords that are short or contain information that's easy to guess, such as your last name plus your year of birth or something of that nature. You have to be very careful about that. Never reuse your passwords in places such as across email, shopping, banking, or other websites. And because the problem there is if one of your emails becomes compromised, then they all become compromised. And also, you know, never share your passwords with anyone and never write them down. So, you know, you got to be – protection starts right there with one of the things you can control is your passwords. Go ahead.
Yeah, because that's a really good point. You know, even sometimes, you know, if you start working somewhere or if you sign up for an account somewhere, sometimes they'll give you a password just for your initial sign in. A lot of people get lazy, or it'll save to their computer, and so they just keep on. They don't even know what the password is. It was just something that was auto-generated. So, again, it sort of puts people behind the eight ball if you're not aware that you need to be doing this stuff.
Yeah, you really want to come up with, you know, your own formula, but, you know, for creating an email. But, you don't want it to be a simple formula where it's a short email or it contains a whole bunch of personal information. But it definitely needs to be complex. Ideally, a formula that you can remember in some way, but, you know, it's really important that you create the right emails and that you don't keep making the same ones. You know, you talked about what should individuals and small businesses do in particular to protect themselves. One of the most important things that can be done is always to keep your software programs patched and up to date, especially Windows and major software programs like that. Updates typically contain security upgrades that plug any exploits that hackers have recently discovered. So when a software program alerts you to update it, that's something you're going to want to do immediately.
Now, Jason Garaby, by the way, the business development and operations manager for Endicom Business IT Solutions in Rocky Hill. Jason, again, thank you so much for being here. You know, we've seen, especially now, we know for a fact that Russia, one of the things they plan on doing is using cyber attacks against the United States. So there's definitely a chance you could see some of this in the coming weeks and months. What are some things that people should look for? Because I know even with some malware, as you and I were talking, you might download it and it just sits on your computer to be activated at a later date.
Yeah, and that's really tough because not only do we have to worry about domestic attacks, but we have to worry about foreign attacks now too. And so it's just the perfect storm. And, you know, hackers have been more and more active in the last few years. And the trend is it's just been getting worse and more dangerous. And so we have to be that much safer to protect ourselves. You might ask, you know, how do you know if your computer has been breached or a hacker has infiltrated your system? It's really hard to determine, especially at the time it happens. Sometimes you might not find out for many days or until an attack is actually launched. But what you're going to want to look for is strange or unusual activity on your computer. If you notice that it starts doing things out of the ordinary or just acting bizarre in general, look for repeated software crashing or system reboots, or all of a sudden it starts getting repeated multiple errors that come on suddenly, unexpected user account lockouts, unexpected password changes, or sudden group permission changes, changes in configuration. You might also see an unusual amount of pop-ups while browsing the internet, or if you click on a link and it doesn't go to the right place or redirects you to a different place, that sort of thing. You know, there's no hard and fast rule to that, but you just have to keep your eyes open.
All right. Jason Garaby, the Business Development and Operations Manager for Endicom Business IT Solutions in Rocky Hill, sort of laid out here what you should be looking for if you're seeing some of these signs. We're going to take a quick break to traffic and weather here on CT Today, then more with Jason Garaby. What happens when you actually do detect a breach? Jason will tell us that right after traffic and weather together on Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM. I am Joe McGuire in for Paul Pacelli. He will be back tomorrow starting at 2 p.m. I am on the line with Jason Garaby, the Business Development and Operations Manager for Endicom Business IT Solutions in Rocky Hill. I recently had Jason on my real estate podcast, Closing Time, and we talked a lot about this. So the question now is, you sort of laid out some things we should be looking for. Say I'm clicking and I am going to those different websites than where I thought I was going, or my computer is slow. I either know or I really strongly suspect that there's been a breach. Jason, what do I do next?
Well, thanks, Joe. The most important thing you can do is just disconnect immediately from online, disconnect from the network, and you're going to want to contact an IT professional at that point because that's serious business. If you suspect a breach, you need to be able to confirm that that's what happened, and there's certain steps you need to take immediately. It's bad enough when you're just an individual, but our company works with our business works with companies, and when it comes to companies in Connecticut, there are certain laws now that govern what you have to do legally if your system or infrastructure becomes breached. And so you need to talk to that IT professional, preferably one like us that has a strong focus on cybersecurity. So any IT company that deals with that, you're going to want to contact them and ask them what the next steps are, one who can help you figure out what happened and run through the proper steps with you to determine what to do next.
And if people do have questions or suspicions, how could they get a hold of you, Jason?
If you wanted to get a hold of us here at Endicom, we do service the entire state, but we are based right out of Rocky Hill. Our main number is 866-796-7900. Our website is www.endicon.com. We're right, like I said, we're right here in Rocky Hill. And if you have any need any help or have any questions regarding cybersecurity or anything with your business, data backup and recovery, if you need business continuity solutions, cloud solutions, basically any kind of managed IT services, we're here for you. So give me a call, let me know the questions. I think you probably help.
You know, one of the questions I had asked you the other day was, I mean, right, we're talking, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, to have a company like yours would have sort of been a luxury. It would have sort of been if your company was doing really well. But where we are now in the world, and as far as how much the internet controls not only our day-to-day lives, but most of how our businesses run, this is no longer a luxury. You really, especially if you own a small business, you really need to have a plan in place, and you need to have the right security. No more just throwing the Norton antivirus on there. Is that right, Jason?
That's right. The days are gone of just slapping on, you know, Norton antivirus or one simple software program, especially if you have a business. Or trying to figure it out yourself, or trying to figure it out with the guy in the office who has the most computer experience but isn't really a professional. It's no longer a luxury. It's a necessity. You have to talk to a professional company. You need your systems monitored. You need multi-layered, robust security on your system nowadays, because that other stuff just ain't going to cut it anymore. And, you know, it's serious business, and it's not getting any better. So, yeah, it's very important.
And we also were talking the other day, and I just thought of it because I didn't remember much about it when we talked last time, but cyber insurance, that's, again, something that people might have seen as a luxury a few years ago. If you are attacked that way, you need to have cyber insurance.
Cyber insurance now is absolutely quintessential and needs to be a part of every business model. It's absolutely a must, because the amount of, the exorbitant amount of costs that you're going to entail if, God forbid, you get breached, is just not manageable. And so it's very important nowadays to make that a part of your business plan.
Again, you and I talked about the companies are going out of business, you know, and even beyond that, the cost of the actual company is when your employees' data records are also breached. You have to then, right, go with each and every employee and monitor them and make sure that there's no more issues that will come from that.
Right, and you have to have a breach response plan, a disaster recovery plan. You have to notify any and all clients that are affected by your breach. All of that gets extremely costly. Sometimes you have to have forensics done. It becomes extremely costly, and the amount of hours that need to be put into fixing something like that with a cyber company, it's just gonna, you know, it's gonna run up, and you're gonna need you're gonna want insurance coverage for that. So it's very important.
Again, if you have any questions, find yourself a professional like Jason from Endicon Business IT Solutions, and see what you have for a system. See what kind of protection you need. Learn about cyber insurance, and then just pray, because again, we're seeing more and more, and the numbers are rising higher and higher, where, because I think hackers know that small businesses are more vulnerable because of the cost associated with this, it makes them even more vulnerable.
Absolutely, and that's why we do a cyber risk assessment with all clients that we're now taking on, because it's just become absolutely necessary to see, just find any, you know, gaps in security and to plug them immediately and to set things in place so the likelihood of getting breached is severely reduced.
Jason Garapi, the Business Development and Operations Manager for Endicon Business IT Solutions in Rocky Hill. Again, they service the entire state. Jason, my friend, appreciate you coming on and talking with me about this again just a couple of weeks later, but thought it was important we get this out to the WICC audience. So thanks so much, my friend, and I'll talk to you later on.
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Of course. I do have a podcast called Divided We Stand, and I'm on the phone with my co-host, my friend. He's a veteran, and he's the real conservative on our show, Jimmy Battisti. Thanks so much for joining us on WICC.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I truly appreciate it.
Now, you and I get asked this question an awful lot. You and I do a show Thursday evenings, and we do the show live, and then we put out the audio podcast the next day, and you and I can get heated at times. We get a little bit heated, and then sometimes people are like, oh, I think Jimmy's going to quit the show, because I've actually had co-hosts quit the show before, but not you. You love it, and you like debating, and that's super important.
Well, you know, Joe, I look at it this way, man. I don't take it personally. You're talking about policies, and you're talking about things that I didn't make. I'm not responsible for them. I'm just applauding for them or booing for them. That's all I'm doing. So I don't understand why you or I should take that personally. Right? I mean, if everybody is about free speech and everybody's about letting somebody have their voice, then it goes both ways. You right. have to, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to mm-hmm. give you your the respect, and you give me the respect that we have our voices. And that's a great thing, and I think people need to do that more.
Yeah, you know, you make a really good point. Again, taking this stuff personally, I don't understand that. It's not like you're the head of the Republican National Committee, right? Like, why would you take the things I say about a Donald Trump, or if we're talking McConnell, or if we're talking the state politics, I bring up Bob Stefanowski or Lamont, right? I mean,
you
have nothing invested in these people. The idea is that these guys, right, Jimmy, they're supposed to be working for us. And it seems like the allegiance is always the other way around. I feel like people sort of have it misguided. A big thing for you and I, I've been telling the listeners at WICC all week, I'm fact-based, and you and I fact-check everything we talk about, and when we come across facts, Jimmy, we're willing to change our mind on things.
Well, you know what, Joe? Here's the thing that I've always kept in mind. Up until about 2 years ago, I was a huge Ben Shapiro listener, right? So 2 years ago, I kind of tapered off. Not for any reason, just... I just did, right? Mm-hmm. But he always said in one of his most famous quotes, facts don't care about your feelings.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very true statement, right? They just don't. Water's wet. It doesn't care if you don't want to get wet or not. it's just going to get you wet.
Which is why, and you know how upset I get about this stuff, when I hear politicians from either side of the aisle misrepresenting things or saying things that aren't true, I get upset by that, because I feel like, again, if people are going to a station like WICC looking for the truth, looking for information, they check out our podcast, Divided We Stand, or you go to your local politicians, or you write your congressman, these people should be telling us the truth, not the convenient truth, not what we want to hear, but reality. It upsets me that we're not there as a country, and I appreciate you, since you, well, this show's literally been, we've been doing this podcast since the 2016 election. And it's right, there's been many revolutions of this show. You've been great since you've been on it, and I couldn't be any more excited, because I, at heart, am a conservative, right? I've told you, I'd like to see the Republican Party fix itself. Some people called into this radio station this week to call me a leftist for thinking that way. Jimmy, the name calling. That's another thing you and I don't do. We disagree, but we don't dislike each other, and we don't go there.
Well, we have a mutual respect in which this country as a whole has lost for each other. And I don't know. We can sit here, we can point fingers back and forth at each other about what party was responsible for that. You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. this great divide. But you know what, Joe? I was thinking about this. It doesn't solve anything. Why point fingers? What we need to be talking about is how do we get back on track, right? That's what we should be talking about instead of who's to blame. Because you know what? It doesn't change anything. We can find out who's to blame, and it doesn't change anything.
Exactly. Well, and so, you know.
So why bother?
Exactly. Right. Again, at the end of the day, you know, and I say this all the time, and I've hit on this. We've talked about it on the podcast. this isn't Joe Biden's fault that we're in Ukraine, and it's not Joe Biden's fault that the price of gas has spiked. It's a little bit Trump's fault, too. It's a little bit Obama's fault. It's a little bit Bush's fault. It's Congress's fault. There's been a lot of people you could blame for the emboldening of Vladimir Putin. So to say, oh, it's Joe Biden's, again, what does that serve and how does that fix the problem?
It doesn't. You're 100% right. And we have talked about this on our podcast. And I think we actually attributed the blame to Obama. No, I'm sorry, to Bill Clinton. Right? If we traced it all the way back to Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And Bush, and then it just kept going through either both parties, right? So I think we said it as Clinton gave
with Al Qaeda.
Right. When he didn't do anything when the coal got hit, that sent a clear message to around the world that we're taking a more passive approach. Right? We're no longer in the days of walk softly and carry a big stick. And I think that was a damaging message. And I'm not saying it was against the Democratic Party. I'm just saying it was a decision at the time that was made that sent a clear message to the entire world.
You know, I don't even think in that moment that Bill Clinton in his head was thinking what a sign of weakness. Because it was literally right after, for anybody that knows the story, Black Hawk Down in Mogadishu, we had let the coal go, the embassy bombings in Tanzania. We had let that go. And then after Black Hawk Down, choppers flew out and we were gone. And I told you about the book. John Miller wrote this book in 1998. When we left Somalia, he started referring to us as the paper tiger. And it really only set the wheels in motion that George Bush had to inherit. And we've been mismanaging all of this literally for the last 22 years.
Foreign affairs, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know what, Joe? I don't want to say everybody's mismanaging and everybody's to blame here because, you know, it's a very tough spot. Like, do you want to be the bully? Do we want to be the bully or do we want to be the protector? I mean, what does the United States, what is our global role, right? And that's what we need to define. And right now, in this very minute, it's not looking good for the home team. That's all I want to say. You know, I mean, Justin Trudeau decided to ban Russian oil before Joe Biden. That's not a good look on Joe Biden's part.
It's not a good look on anybody's part. Germany's still buying that gasoline. That's literally
dependent upon that.
Mm-hmm.
So
all right.
You can't blame them.
Yeah. No, I get it. Listen, you know, again, to play the blame game, you could literally point at all of these people and all of these things going on. And again, like you said, what does it solve? It doesn't solve anything. Now, Jimmy, hang on the line for a minute. We got to take a quick traffic and weather on the sixes. We're going to talk about our debate casting. You made this thing happen, so I'm going to have you explain it, and we'll talk about what it is. And I think our topic for this debate is really cool. I want to share that coming up right after this at WICC 600 AM at 107.3 FM. I am Chubb McGuire in for Paul Pacelli on the line with my friend. He's a veteran of the Iraq War, the co-host of Divided We Stand, and a wannabe actor. Well, not just a wannabe actor. You're working towards becoming an actor. You've been landing roles. Jimmy Battisti, thank you for joining us. And then, Jimmy, you roped me into this thing. Tell us a little bit about the debate casting. What are we doing? This is really cool.
So debate cast takes friends, family members, a pair, whoever, right? Could be spouses. And they pick a topic that we just really disagree on. But yet they want to highlight how we can very much disagree on a very political topic and yet still remain family, friends, husband, wife, you know, whatever. So
that's what they're really highlighting on the show that I actually applied for without your knowledge, actually.
Yes. I literally got an email from them like, hey, can we schedule a time? And I was like, hey, Jimmy, what did you do here?
Well, you know, I figured, Joe, just like on our podcast, would be a great opportunity for you and I to show everyone that we can very much disagree, very, very much disagree on topics and still remain friends. I mean, we hang out all the time, and we don't talk politics 100% of the time. It's a lot of the time, but we're still friends. And this show that we were invited on, and we're going to be hammering out on a very hot topic. It's a very hot topic nowadays.
Yeah, it is. Hate speech. It's funny because, again, knowing what a conservative you are, I had suggested we talk about the transgender movement, and they obviously declined on that.
Yes. Yes. I don't think anybody wants to talk about that topic, right? It's a little too hot.
That's too hot, yeah. But listen, certainly hate speech, and for many people, just so people know, you know, hate speech covers a lot of things, but hate speech is, as you're fond of saying, Jimmy, and you're right about it, hate speech isn't an actual thing that's recognized by the government or by law enforcement. Hate speech is anything, obviously, where you're justifying hatred or violence or discriminating against a person or a group of people, but there's technically no law against hate speech.
Right. So why did we come up with this new word? Why did we just come up with this new phrase that's called hate speech? Why do we need it? Why did we come up with it? That's a question I'm going to ask on the show. Because we have laws in place to stop incitement. We have laws in place to stop threatening. We have laws in place to stop all the racism and stuff like that. I mean, there's laws on the books. So why did the left, because this is a very left thing, and you can't deny that, why did the left come up with this new term? And there's only one answer. There's only one logical answer that you can come up with, and that's to label something that you disagree with so you can shut them up, and that's it. That is it. Because if they wanted to be technical about it, if they wanted to be serious about it, they would actually use a vernacular that's available to us.
Most hate speech is protected under the First Amendment, including the burning of a cross. Like,
correct.
Right? Things that you would, burning the American flag.
Which, you know, as a veteran, I hate, can't stand, makes me cringe, makes me, you know, more angry than anything in the world, yet I will still fight for your right to do so.
See, that's the other thing about you and me, Jimmy. I've been talking about it a lot on this station this week, and I specifically brought up the Second Amendment, your right to bear arms, and the 14th Amendment, which protects your right to choose whether or not you're going to have a baby. And my whole stance is what you were just – I would never fight against someone else's rights. We don't have a lot of rights in this country. The government's always looking for ways to take our rights away. I would never actively protest and attempt to take someone else's rights away.
So you know that I am a conservative, and I am a Republican, and I am pro-choice.
Yes.
And it's the only reason why I am pro-choice is because, I mean, look, my wife and I would have a very, very heated discussion if she ever came to me and asked me if she could get an abortion. Absolutely not, in my opinion, right? I don't think she would either, but I don't agree with it. I hope to God that nobody ever gets one, but who am I to tell you what to do? Who am I to judge you, right? I mean, if you're a Christian, if you're a Catholic, and you believe in God, and God tells you not to judge, who are you to judge other people for their decisions? So that's why that's the only reason why I'm pro-choice. I would never do it. I would fight against somebody else doing it, not fight, but I would advocate for somebody not to do it. But who am I to judge?
Yeah.
So That's why I'm pro-choice.
Right? Just be reasonable. And as we started this conversation with Jimmy, really, if you don't have a dog in the fight necessarily, don't get that upset about things. You know? Don't be upset about other people's problems. It's not doing anything for you. You could check out me and Jimmy, Divided We Stand, Thursday nights at 8 o'clock. You could download the podcast on all of the platforms. You can also check us out on YouTube. Jimmy Battisti, you, sir, I will talk to you later. I will see you tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Thank you for joining me on the show today, bud.
Thanks for having me, Joe.